Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chofav. And we are holding after the lovely story of that delicious mother-in-law who so enjoyed her kala's decoration of delicious balsam oil. Okay, we got up to Umidalota Aretz Yishir Nevuzradan Rav Tabachim L'Chormim U'L'Yogvi. So we're talking about over here of those that were not taken along to Bavel after the Churban. And it says in Yirmiyahu that for some reason, Nevuzradan, who was the chief murderer, he left the poorest of the people to be Kormim and Yogvim. Now, obviously, it can't literally mean Kormim v'Yogvim. That the Gemara is taking for granted. Not that we know what Yogvim are precisely, although it seems to be a different lotion of Korim, Yogave. Rashi says we could exchange the otiot, but in any event, because these are not skilled workers, and there'd be no reason why Nevuzradan would have left them behind. Therefore, the Gemara understands that Kormim and Yogvim are to be understood as very skilled workers that he could not afford to transport to Bavel because of the fact that it would destroy an important product that they needed to get specifically from Eretz Yisrael. Says Reb Yosef that this refers to, the Kormim refers to Malakdei Afar Simon, Mein Gedi V'Adramata. So these are the people that knew the secrets of the Afar Simon, where we talk about in the Beit HaKnesset, the Ein Gedi, that anybody who's a member over here has sworn not to tell our secret. These were like professionals, and this was extremely expensive oil that needed to be professionally derived. Nobody knew the secrets of how to do that. And Yogvim is referring to people that knew how to get the chilazon for Tcheles. And that was also very professional, and it was something that was an extremely high demand. And that's all he needed to do, was to destroy the industry for making Tchelet, because that would have made a tremendous impact on the clothing market for the higher echelons. Later on, of course, it became, at the time of the Romans, it became usur already for any commoner to wear those kind of things. So because of that, he could not afford to destroy it. This Sulmot Shel Tzor is the area that we call today Rosh HaNikra, and further up the coast, they're going all the way down to Haifa. Tana Rabbanan. Yeah, let's get back to the different things that are usur. Ein Madlikim B'Tevel Tameh B'Chol. We've been talking about Shemen Sreifa as far as Truma, but how about if you haven't taken off the Truma yet? How about if the oil is still Tevel? Well, then you are not allowed to use it. Not even during the week you're not allowed to use it, and Koshiken you're not allowed to use it for Shabbos. And the same thing is true about kerosene. Neft Lavan you cannot use even during the week, and for sure you can't use it on Shabbos. Now, Neft Lavan, I understand. I mean, obviously, I can't use it any time because it's going to burn the house down. I mean, that's all I need is to have it escape. And besides that, it stinks. So, you know, certainly don't want to have a kerosene lamp for Shabbos. But a Tevel Tameh, where do we get the idea that the Tevel before the Truma was taken off is more Chomor? Maybe you are allowed to light with it. Where does it say it's Aser? That's because Amar Kroah. Remember the pasuk that we had before. Ani hinei natati lachat mishmeret trumotai. We said that the double, the plural trumotai, includes shtei trumot hakatuv medaber, whether it's truma tahora or whether it's truma tameya. And it's comparing the idea of lecha that we said before. Remember we said, I'm giving it to you. That's great. But when did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give truma to the kohen? In the same way that truma tahora, you only have a right to eat that truma after all, after it's no longer tevel. A kohen who eats tevel is going to be chayav mizu b'dei shamayim the same way anybody else is. And he can't say, well, I mean, I got truma in there anyway. It's all mine. So the same way that the Torah is comparing the trumotai one to the other, whether it's tamei or tahar, it is saying you can only use it once it is already truma. Mashenken v'stil tevel. It's osir af truma tamein l'chaba elam yisha'at haramah ve'elach. It's only from the point of time in which you can make it truma after it's no longer tevel, then we could talk about lecha. Anyway, let's get back to the sugya of tzori, gufa. So we said, Rav Shimon ben Elazar omer ein madlikim b'tzori. You're not allowed to use this balsam. First of all, we said, chod v'od. First of all, it's very flammable. So because of that, it could burn the house down. And besides that, even if, the way we understood it, is that even if you did something to lessen the flammability by mixing it with something else, you still can't use it because it smells so good that he's choshish that you may end up taking some out, and therefore you will be over on Mechabe on Shabbat, because taking a fuel out is the same thing as putting out fire. Now, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar furthermore said that Tzori Eno El Asraf Me'atzei HaKitaf, that the whole meaning of Tzori is that it's a type of sap that comes from these trees, Atzei HaKitaf, which are called balsam trees. So the idea over here is that something that is coming from that tree, and it's a question whether this is meant as an explanation or this is a... Please stop bothering. So this is Reb Shloime Kaplan, by the way. He was reminding me that we do have a desperate need for the Pesach Seder for many families who, because of the current matzav, are in much worse situations than they would have been normally, which was pretty bad. And I mean, he says he has people literally that last Shabbos did not have a Shabbos Seder because they had nothing to eat. And they have absolutely nothing for the Seder coming up. A lot of the normal funding for these people has dried up because of the many issues. Obviously, the financial issues are serious, but so is the banking issues and getting money around and so on. So in any event, we would like to open. I know Barnea is not feeling so well, and we wish him a refuah shleima, but we do need an envelope, a virtual envelope. So Reb Barnea is making a virtual envelope. Anybody who would like to donate can just let me know, and I'll put the money together meanwhile and get it to Reb Shleima, and then we can figure out how to transfer the funds later. But meanwhile, they'll have it for Pesach. Anyway, so getting back to this. So when he comes along and he says, Ein madlikim b'tzari, because Rashi understands two pshatim, because of the fact that this tzari is a min ha'etz, and something that is min ha'etz, we're going to see later on, is not well absorbed by a wick. It's too sticky to be absorbed by a wick. But another pshat, he says that maybe this has nothing to do with the original statement of Reb Shimon ben Elazar. Now, I must introduce the next fascinating sugya by pointing out that, if you recall, the Mishnah was an extremely confusing Mishnah because without any warning, it switched between a list of materials that are usable or not usable for wicks, and then it suddenly started talking about fuels. And it made no distinction between them, and it was a strange non-transition, which we understood is coming to tell us that candles, such as we use, which are extended wicks that have the fuel built in, so to speak, are not included in the separate iser of the fuels and the wicks. So even though the wax is not usable as a fuel, but it is usable as a seal, that is to say, as an extended wick, so to speak. That's how we view the candle. Now, that's a very logistical interpretation, which is beautiful that the Mishnah would give us a remez. Is there a more profound issue that the Mishnah is being meramez to? Now, remember, we've had the craziest situation here in which we've gotten into all types of different elements that came out of a connection to Shabbos and to Das, which brought us into questions of Tumah v'Taira in the Yud Ches Dover and the interrelationship of Shammai v'Hillel and their connection to the human condition in general, which had to do with Das and so on in the Maseches Eruvin. But what we've never talked about is the question of the eights. Now, you must admit that the eights has an awfully big place in our relationship to Maaseh Bereishis. And we have something very interesting about eights, which is certain eitzim are used because of the eights, and certain eitzim are used because of the pre. And the fundamental breakdown of Maaseh Bereishis was that trees and fruits remain essentially different, which should not be the case. So we have the Tama Eitz Ketama Pri. This was the breakdown of Maaseh Bereishis, which is alluded to, as Rashi says, that the reason that Adam is Nenash, the Eitz, the Eretz, was Nenash because of the fact that Kish, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that it should be Eitz Pri. Instead, the arts brought forth Eitz Osepri. Now, this brings us back to the issue in Maaseh Bereishis and in our celebration of Maaseh Bereishis and in our human condition within the initial Gan Eden state of the relationship of wicks to fuel. Because basically, the wick that we're talking about over here is the Eitz. In other words, it's the direct growth into the cellulose. The question of the fuel, what we've been talking about so far, has been fuel that comes from peirot. So we have the oil. But what about fuel that comes from the tree itself? That's a different question, and that is an interesting interrelationship. Remember, we had the weird case where the Eitz has wool in it, and that started off, that was the transition between the previous perek, the Amranita Shabbat, between the previous perek and this perek, was the wool between the bark and the inner wood, which strangely shows up in the Arava as well, which has very important implications. And now, all of a sudden, it turns out that we're going to get confused with that famous statement, Kol ha-yotze min ha-eitz ein madlikim bo. What does that mean? Fuel that's yotze min ha-eitz? Or does it mean psilos that are yotze min ha-eitz? This brings us into a relationship that we're going to explore now. Again, all beneath the surface, but we're going to explore now on this daf, which brings us straight back to the nature of materials and the relationship of materials to human usage, which, of course, is the question of the Sheshes Yimei Bereishis. By the way, you'd think I was just shooting off my head, but those of you who have been listening to Masechet Kelim recognize that the craziest thing that the Mishnah in Perek Yud Zayin does is that it integrates the Sheshes Yimei Bereishis with the Dinim of Tuma V'Taira, and it goes through the products that were created on Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, in terms of their sensitivity to Tuma V'Taira, which is absolutely nutty, unless the Mishnah is telling you that this is really where you need to look to understand the human connection to materials, which is the source of Tuma V'Taira in the first place. So because of this, a lot of the sugyas today take advantage of the confusion in the Mishnah, so to speak, by looking at something from the point of view of Eitz or Pri vis-a-vis the wick and confusing us about what they would hold about the nature of the material. Now, these are the two Lashonos in Rashi over here. Is what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar was referring to the question of, since they are Atzei HaKetaf, so because of that, you cannot use it, because as we'll see later on, anything from the Eitz is not usable, or does, since Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar was talking later on about materials, this is a different statement, and it's not connected to the question of the fuel. So let's begin at this point to explore the issue. So Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar also said, let's assume, that what sari is a resin that drips out of the Atzei HaKetaf. Rabbi Yishmael says the general rule is that kol ha-yotze min ha-eitz ein madlikin bo. Something that comes directly from a tree, you cannot use to light. Now, of course, this immediately gets you thinking, as Tosis points out, wait a minute, didn't we say kol ha-yotze min ha-eitz ein madlikin bo ela pishtan? How come it doesn't say ela pishtan, like the Lashon of the Mishnah, right? And that's because the Mishnah, says Tosis, was talking about wicks. Whereas over here, we've moved on to fuels. Okay, in any event, this is already our first confusing issue. So suddenly Rabbi Yishmael is saying, if it comes out of a tree, then all of those kinds of resins are too thick to be used properly because they're not absorbed in the wick. Very good. So Rabbi Yishmael ben Brok Omer, Ein madlikin ela biyotze min ha-pri. You can only light with something that comes from a fruit, not that comes from a tree. Rabbi Tarfon says, forget about a fruit, but as my name implies, Taref Pepia, the only thing you can light is with Shemen Zayit Bilvat. That's the only thing that is usable for Hadlaka. Omad Rabbi Yochanan, that we saw before, that this is something that is beautifully drawn up the wick, and it also produces a very beautiful flame. So that outraged Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri, and he stood up on his feet, And he said, and what exactly do we expect people who live in Bovell who don't have olive oil? All they have is sesame oil. Are they supposed to give up on Adlakas Neris? What are people from Mudai supposed to do who don't have either of those and all they have is nut oil? What are people who live in Alexandria supposed to do? My God, you're going to say the entire borough park should go without Adlakas Neris because all they have is oil that is made out of radish seed? And what are going to people from Kaputkia supposed to do? That all they have is kerosene. Ela, I say, ein lecha lama shamru chachamim, ein madlikim. It's the whatever appeared in the original Mishnah. Ein madlikim bi. That's what you cannot use, but you can use shemen dogim, and even itran, I say, shemen dogim not being, according to Tosfos, the equivalent of the chalev that was mentioned in the original Mishnah, and he attacks Rashi on assuming that shemen dogim is the shemen dogim we're talking about before. Shemen dogim, according to this, is referring to shemen that is made from the eye of the fish, like in the story of Rabbi Bar Chana, where they got so much oil out of that eye in the exaggerated story. And it comes along Sumchus, and he says, well, anything that comes from basar, you cannot use for hadlaka, which would mean that you do not use fats, lards, anything like that, right? And that would be on the surface, would include fish. But, says Sumchus, when it comes to fish, b'shem and dagim, that you can use. I understand. But that's exactly what the Tanna Kamma, meaning Rabbi Yochanan, that's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said when he stood up on his feet. And he said, only things that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Okay, so the things that are mentioned in the Mishnah is not to light with chalev, which is yotzim in abasar. And he said, beferish, that you are allowed, said Rabbi Yochanan himself, that you are allowed to light with the shemen dagim. So they're saying exactly the same thing. So hainu tana kama. They both said exactly the same words. Answers the Gemara, it must be, as we answered before, the difference is the Rav Brona Amar Rav. Remember Rav Brona Amar Rav, where the question was, what if you add oil that is nimshach yafet to something that is not? Can you then use it? And that was the question about fats. So one of them, either Sumchus or Rav Yochanan, one of them held of Rav Brona Amar Rav, and one of them didn't. We don't know from their words, v'lo misaymei, there's no way to know which one is being machmir and which one is saying you could use it if you added a little bit of shemen zayit. Tani Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer. Now, here's where we make our transition to the nature of beged and material that has its source in the same thing that we began with in terms of the ptilot, not in terms of the shemen. So, in terms of the ptilot, what we talked about in the Mishnah and in the associated Braita at the beginning of the Perek was the relationship of things like wool or linen, threads, cotton, and so on and so forth. So the question is this, what is the din of tumah by all of these things? Now you'll note there's only one place, and this is the transition was, of course, Sumchus. Sumchus, even though, technically speaking, the only thing that he's dealing with that is new is Rav Brona Amar Rav, but he is saying something besides technically. And what he's saying is that you have to analyze the difference between fruit and between flesh. So, in other words, the concept of animal life and vegetable life is different when it comes to the issues of Tumah V'Tairah, which have been so much a part of our sugya over here, and in terms of the Hadlakas Ner of Shabbos. So, our first thing that we need to recognize is there's only one place in the entire Torah where the definition of a beged is given. One of those begadim is a beged of tzemer. One of those begadim is a beged of pishtan. Those two things are so fundamental that they described two different approaches to reality back in Bereshis, and that was the difference between Cain and Hevel, one of whom chooses tzemer and one of whom chooses pishtan. It's because of this that we have a completely different way of life with those who are the animal, and they go from place to place with their animals and with those who chose agriculture. And the entire earth develops differently in those two approaches. Because of that, we talk about in the introduction to Shabbos, Darsha Tzemer Upishtim, which is crazy. What's this Darsha Tzemer Upishtim have to do with Eishes Chayim? So that means this goes all the way back to the fundamental differences that are related to in Shalom in the Olam, Kina in the Olam, breakdowns of Shalom between Kayin veHevel, and relate to the whole question of Shabbos from the very beginning, which was the restoration of Shalom. So we're talking about all kinds of strange issues over here that are, again, hidden behind a sudden jump to the question of what type of begodim or mekabel tuma made from which things. So we begin with Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Kol ha-yotzei min ha-eitz, ein bo mishum sholosh ha-sholosh, u-misachachin bo, chutz mi-pishta. Now, what this means is that anything that grows from a tree, now Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar was referring here to the dinim of schach for a sukkah. Because of that, he cannot be talking about wool at all, because in order to be kosher for schach for sukkah, it has to be gidulei karka. How do we know it has to be gidulei karka? Well, because back in the creation story, it says, v'eid ya'aleh min ha'aretz, right? And that is gidulei karka, which, of course, is the mokar. Here we go back again. But anyway, so it needs to be gidulei karka. So we're only talking about making that sukkah out of something that would come from a tree. Those things that come from a tree that you are allowed to use for schach could even be used for schach if they were woven into a material. And as long as that material is not 3x3, now note that the shalosh is lasha nekeva, and therefore shalosh ha-shalosh would be a reference to etzbaot, which is nekeva, not to tfachim, which is zohar, right? So if it's only 3 finger breadths, which is less than 3 inches, remember the finger that we're talking about over here is all thumbs, right? So if it's less than 3 finger breadths, then it's not considered to be a beged, because if it would be a beged, you couldn't use it for a sukkah, could you? Because then it would be mekabel tuma. And this has to be something that is not mekabel tuma. So therefore, if it's anything but pishtan, you could use it for your sukkah. But if it's pishtan and it's been woven, and it has the shear of 3x3 etzbaot, it's going to be mekabel tuma, even though it's so small. Omar Abaya, so Abaya said, look, this basically boils down to that beautiful limud from the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael. I think that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is essentially telling us exactly what Rabbi Yishmael was saying in Omru Davar Echad. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, my reference is to what I just said to you. And the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, I believe, is his source. Because my yid, the Tani Devei Rabbi Yishmael, Ho'il v'nemru begadim b'Torah stam. There's lots of places where the Torah talks about clothes. But say tzitzit, just put it on your clothes. It talks about a beged that touches a sheretz, right? So it says, o beged, o or. It talks about a beged that touches a mate, v'chol beged v'chol klior. It talks about a beged sheyesh alav shikvat zera. What is this beged? It never defined it. Says the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, Ho'il v'nemru begadim b'Torah stam. And there's one place where the Torah insists on defining it. And that is by Tumas Negoyim, where we have a klal and a prat. And the prat always in that situation is absolutely definitive. And it says, v'habeged kiyebo negat sarat, Babeget semer or babeget pishtim. Wow, that's about as clear as you could possibly get. When I say beged, my reference is to beged semer and beged pishtim. So since the Torah defined by mitzorah, semer or pishtim, that becomes now the model for the use of the word beged with a mamatzinu, malahalan semer or pishtim, afkot semer or pishtim. Says Rava, you may be right about his source, but you're wrong about saying that he and Rabbi Yishmael agree. Because according to Rabbi Yishmael, it wouldn't matter what size the beged was, it still would not be mekabel tuma. But you'll note that according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says you can use anything that comes from a tree. Remember, pishtim is considered to be a tree, b'pishtei ha'etz, it says b'feresh. And except for pishtim, As long as it's only less than 3 by 3. 3 by 3, female 3 by 3. So let's use the Hebrew word. Shalosh al shalosh. But suppose it would be shlosha al shlosha. Then I would never have made this statement. Which means that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar appears to be saying that even if it's cotton, if it's 3 by 3 tefachim, shlosha al shlosha, and not shalosh al shalosh finger breadths of etzba'ot, then he would hold that it is mekabel tuma, and you could not use it for your sukkah, in which you would be praying for the very gishomim, which was the Eid Ya'aleh min ha'aretz ki adam ayin, in order to bring rain. So because of that, I say they're saying totally different things. Shlosha al shlosha b'shar b'gadim ikabinayot. There's a big difference between them. How about something made out of cotton? Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, itla, he says that is mekabel tuma, and only cotton of shalosh al shalosh. Whereas the Tanya, the very Rabbi Shmuel, who brought the pasuk to exclude anything, he obviously likely. There's a big difference between them. Okay, says the Gemara, let's explore that a little bit. What you're saying is that everybody agrees that 3 by 3 etzba'ot, shalosh al shalosh, is mekabel tuma in the pasuk of Negoim. How do you know that the pasuk is talking about even a piece of woven cloth of shalosh al shalosh? Since it mentioned beged, why might it not mean a real beged? Something that you can wear, something you put on, not a little piece of cloth. Shalosh al shalosh is nothing but a patch. Oh, says the, I know that from the Braita, the Tanya. It says in the pasuk beged, or it doesn't really. It says oba beged. But let us say, it would have said just the word beged, okay? What would I have said? So had it just said the word beged in the pasuk in Sarat, so then I would have said, Ainli ella beged. It must mean literally beged. But it doesn't say beged. It says viha beged. So how do I know, if I would have thought it's only a beged, how would I know that even 3 by 3 etzba'ot shalosh al shalosh, Talmud lomar, viha beged, as a riboy to include other things, even shalosh al shalosh. Now, how do you know that? Maybe viha beged comes to include shlosha al shlosha, but only if it's tzemru pishtim, of course. How do you know to jump all the way down to shalosh al shalosh, which is the first usable size of material that you could use for a small patch? Oh, why would I need a pasuk to tell me shalosh al shalosh? It's a kal v'chomer. Because remember that the Torah says, o bashasi, o ba'arev, which means that even threads that are usable for warp or for weave are still going to be mekabel tuma, even if they're not even woven in the least. They're going to be mekabel tuma of tzaras on a spool of thread. So I don't need a pasuk to tell me that if it's woven into material, for heaven's sake, that it's going to be mekabel tuma. Of course it will be mekabel tuma, if even just thread that's unprocessed into material. So that's a kal v'chomer. Hashtash yisiva arev miz mitamei. Do I need a pasuk to tell me that shlosha al shlosha is mitamei? Therefore, the pasuk v'habeged must be coming to tell me shalosh al shalosh. What? I don't understand. You have the same kal v'chomer on shalosh al shalosh that you do on shlosha al shlosha. What are you talking about? If you're telling me that once something is processed into a piece of material, it's obviously going to be more roy to be mekabel tuma than just threads are, so then I know shalosh al shalosh from that too, don't I? No, you don't. Let me show it to you. How do I know you don't? Did you ever suggest that if you have 2 by 2 etzba'ot, it would be mekabel tuma? No, why not? Because it's useless. So why don't you say, but it's a kal v'chomer, isn't it? If shesiva erev is mekabel tuma, koshekein 1 by 1 is mekabel tuma. Not true. Because 1 by 1 is completely useless and is thrown into the garbage. Mashenkin, a spool of thread that could be used for shesi or for erev, is absolutely not garbage, and it's exactly what you will use and you will keep in order to use to weave begadim. So this is nonsense. 3 by 3, you're okay, but 3 by 3 is definitely better than shesi ve'erev, isn't it? No, it's not. Because 3 by 3, in terms of etzba'ot, is something that most well-to-do people, middle-class people, will throw into the garbage. They will not say, I'm going to make a collection of little tiny pieces of material just in case I get a hole somewhere that I need to use. If they ever need a patch, they'll cut a patch from a bigger piece of cloth. It's only somebody who's desperately poor who's going to keep a tiny piece of material of shalosh b'shalosh etzba'ot, which means that shalosh b'shalosh is less important than yeshiva erev, which anyone will keep. Mashenkin shlosha al shlosha, which anyone will keep, is indeed a kal v'chomer from Shesiva Erev. Beautiful. So shlosha al shlosha, which is useful, bein la'ashirim, bein la'aniim, that indeed is a kal v'chomer. It's certainly better than Shesiva Erev. But shalosh al shalosh, which most people will throw in the garbage, and it's only useful for aniim, reminding you of Rabbi Kaplan's fund, and la'ashirim, it is not chazyan, that can't be learned from the kal v'chomer, because it indeed is less chashev than the Shesiva Erev. So there, why is it Tamei? Only because the Pasuk added it with the words Ve'habeged. So there, the Katvei Kra, had the Pasuk not written Ve'habeged, I would not be able to learn it out from the Kal V'chomer. Now you understand why I said that the Pasuk is coming to teach me Shalosh al Shalosh, and I don't need the Pasuk to tell me Shlosha al Shlosha. Okay. Now wait a minute. You're still making an assumption. Because, look, I mean, the pasuk, you brought me a pasuk that says, let's expand the given definition from beged to ve'habeged. And the expansion of that definition is that we should include even shalosh al shalosh. Well, why don't we look at it otherwise? Why don't we say, the expansion of that definition is to say that begadim other than tzemer upishtim are tamei if they're big enough to be shlosha shlosha. But how do you know to include something which is even less choshev than Shesiva Erev of Tzemer u'Pishtim? That's an excellent question. Maybe it should be marbe shlosha al shlosha, made out of other materials. And we should understand that the pasuk that defines beged initially in terms of Tzemer u'Pishtim is only something that is less than shlosha al shlosha. Masha'inkin shalosh al shalosh. Okay, this is a big machlokas. Rashi and Tosfos had, and how do I know shalosh al shalosh? Rashi says the Gemara is now assuming that shalosh al shalosh would be included in the Kal V'chomer, and it's changed its mind. Tosfos says, why the heck would we say something like that? The Gemara is simply saying that once we have the discussion of a beged, then we have no right to limit it. It doesn't give us any indication that there's something that is different than the size. It's only once we get into the veha beged that we start saying, now wait a minute, then that means that we're adding something. So the something that we're adding would be other materials and would leave shalosh al shalosh included in the general definition of beged, but only for tzemer u'pishtim as stated. Well, I don't understand, but it says in the pasuk tzemer u'pishtim. Does that mean beged tzemer u'pishtim only and midi achrini not? No, you're not understanding me. I'm saying that there are two different types of issues over here. That the pasuk is referring to some basic state of beged that could be any size. And therefore, now that it's saying there's an additional thing that extends, now I have to worry about the size. Ah, so then my question is that the miut is referring to other begadim from this smaller than shalosh, because it's from shlosha, meaning it's still shalosh, but not shlosha. That indeed is not included. And that's limited to the chashivas of tzemer u'pishtim in terms of patchwork and so on. But once it's shlosha al shlosha, v'ha beged should be marba even shlosha al shlosha. Ah, that's your question. Okay, that's a good question. But I have a very good answer. Because actually, there are two separate sukkim that are mentioned in the sugya of Tzaras that expect you to understand that it's beged semer o bebeged pishtim. And we have another pasuk that says bebeged semer o pishtim. Oh, ha-pishtim, actually, it says. So that means that twice we have the mention of specifically beged, tzemer, upishtim, and nothing else. One is to be mayed a shlosha shalosh, and one is to be mayed even shlosha al shlosha. So then that means that we have here a clear indication in the Braita, we need to limit it to tzemer, upishtim, and to nothing else whatsoever. Now, this, of course, is a problem, because according to Rava, Rava claimed that actually Rav Shimon ben Elazar does not agree with all of this, and that he learns that shlosha al shlosha bishar begadim ika binayu, and that if it's cotton, let's say, and it is shlosha al shlosha, according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, itle. It's only the Tana Devei Reb Yishmael, which we just finally understood fully, letle, But where the heck does Reb Shimon ben Elazar know that there's a din of shlosha al shlosha b'shar begadim if we just managed to read through the entire sugya of Tzoras and we could not find even the slightest hint that would allow us to expand to anything but Tzamaru Pishtim? Where would he get that from? Answers the Gemara, he gets it not from Negayim. He gets it from Obeged. That does not appear in the parsha of Negayim. It appears in Tumas Sheretz. And over there, the Torah wants to add Obeged. And from there, which we'll talk about tomorrow, we learn out an entirely new din of Tuma, which is learned from Shratzim and not from Tzorat.